This is Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. We present Jill Bevilacqua's program, There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye. Let's listen.
The sisters of Lazarus sent word to Jesus to inform him, Lord, the one you love is sick. Upon hearing this, Jesus said, This sickness is not to end in death. Rather, it is for God's glory, that through it the Son of God may be glorified. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus very much. Yet, after hearing that Lazarus was sick, he stayed on where he was for 2 days more. Finally, he said to his disciples, Let us go back to Judea. When Jesus arrived at Bethany, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him while Mary sat at home. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would never have died. Even now I'm sure that God will give you whatever you ask of him. Your brother will rise again, Jesus assured her. I know he will rise again, Martha replied, in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus told her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he should die, will come to life, and whoever is alive and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I have come to believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, he who is to come into the world. Jesus was troubled in spirit, moved by the deepest emotions. Where have you laid him? He asked. Lord, come and see, they said. Jesus began to weep, which caused the Jews to remark, See how much he loved him. But some said, He opened the eyes of that blind man. Why could he not have done something to stop this man from dying? Once again, troubled in spirit, Jesus approached the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across it. Take away the stone, Jesus directed. Martha, the dead man's sister, said to him, Lord, it's been 4 days now. Surely there will be a stench. Jesus replied, Did I not assure you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? They then took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward and said, Father, I thank you for having heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd, that they may believe that you sent me. Having said this, he called loudly, Lazarus, come out! The dead man came out, bound hand and foot with linen strips, his face wrapped in a cloth. Untie him, Jesus told them, and let him go free. This caused many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did to put their faith in him.
At a time when email and even telegrams were centuries away in the future, two sisters sent a telegraphic message to Jesus of 7 words. Lord, the one you love is sick. There was no need to elaborate. He would understand immediately. And this brief message, which led to this last great miracle before his passion, brings to mind those 4 words spoken by his mother, leading to his first miracle. In Cana, they have no wine. But before we even consider the miracle of the raising of the brother of Martha and Mary, our natural curiosity pushes to the fore all kinds of questions. Who were they, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, the brother who only appears as a resurrected body and as a guest at a dinner? We don't know anything about him. Was he tall or short, thin or fat, dull or witty? What was his relationship with his sisters? And a fairly obvious question, what did he die of? One thing we do know, though, our Lord loved him, which should be enough for us. The evangelists certainly think so. As for Mary and Martha, we've already met them, and their personalities are clearly etched in Luke's account, where Martha is distracted with much serving, while Mary sits at our Lord's feet. Still, one would like to know something more about this family. Are they all about our Lord's age? 30-ish? Is Martha perhaps the eldest, and was she ever married? Mary we're never sure of. Was she Magdalene? We know she anointed the feet of Jesus at the house of Simon the leper, also in Bethany, where Martha again is serving, and Lazarus, raised from the dead, is one of the guests. Certainly, Jesus was very close to this little family, and it is to their house that he goes most often, as if it were a second home. There's a description by travel writer H.V. Morton of the view from the Mount of Olives, which must have been very familiar to Jesus as he went back and forth between Jerusalem and his friend's house in Bethany.
The Mount of Olives is slightly higher than Jerusalem and stands up, therefore, like a screen between the city and the desert land that falls to the Dead Sea. From the top of the Mount of Olives, the view looked like a photograph of the mountains of the moon, an apparently sterile world of brown, domed hills piled together, bare of vegetation, and falling rapidly into the hot distance, where a streak of blue marked the waters of the Dead Sea. Beyond the blueness rose a barrier of brown hills streaked with violet shadows. They were the mountains of Moab. This was a view that Jesus knew well, and it's not altered since his eyes gazed upon it. He saw it when he came over the hill from Bethany. The golden age of Israel was in the desert, and I wondered as I looked down on the silent, dead hills whether Jesus loved to sleep in Bethany because, after the wrangling in the temple court, he could catch a glimpse, as he crossed the Mount of Olives on his way back in the evening, of the calm, desert place, dedicated forever to God.
And Bethany, a village about 2 miles east of Jerusalem, described by Morton, writing in the 1930s, as a little Arab village on a slight hill, a huddle of houses that looked like ruins, and ruins that looked like houses. And this huddle, he goes on, stands on the spot which Jesus knew as Bethany, the home of dates. There's no doubt at all that this is Bethany. But although tourist guides may point out Mary and Martha's house, as our writer comments, it cannot possibly be authentic. All one can say is that somewhere on the hill is the house in which Martha, Mary, and their brother Lazarus lived. Incidentally, the modern Arabic name for Bethany is El Azareh, a form of Lazarus or Eleazar, a very common name at that time, meaning in Hebrew, God helps. And so to our miracle, and to an unusual interpretation of the feelings and thoughts of our Lord on this occasion. Here is The Raising of Lazarus, written by German poet Rainer Maria Rilke in the early 20th century.
One had to bear with the majority. What they wanted was a sign that screamed. Martha, though, and Mary, he had dreamed they would be contented just to see that he could. But not a soul believed him. "Lord, you've come too late," said all the crowd. So to peaceful nature, though it grieved him, on he went to do the unallowed. Asked them, eyes half shut, his body glowing with anger, "Where's the grave?" Tormentedly. And to them it seemed his tears were flowing, as they thronged behind him curiously. As he walked, the thing seemed monstrous to him, childish, horrible experiment. Then there suddenly went flaming through him such an all-consuming argument against their life, their death, their whole collection of separations made by them alone. All his body quivered with rejection as he gave out hoarsely, "Raise the stone." Someone shouted that the corpse was stinking, buried now 4 days ago. But he stood erect, brimful of that unblinking, mounting gesture that so painfully lifted up his hand. No hand was ever raised so slowly, so immeasurably. till it stood there, shining in the gloom. There it slowly, clawingly contracted. What if all the dead should be attracted upwards, through that siphon of a tomb, where a pallid, chrysalid thing was writhing up from where it had been lying? But it stood alone, no more applying, and they saw vague, unidentifying life, compelled to give it harboring.
From this very individual impression to a comment by Sheed, nothing is stranger in the story of the raising of Lazarus, he writes, than Jesus' own reactions, his weeping and distress, his sighing and groaning. But his tears could have been prompted at the sight of Mary weeping and the knowledge that Martha too was grieving in her own way, while he himself had lost a dear friend. But we're also told, more than once, that he was troubled in spirit, moved by the deepest emotions. What were they, these emotions? There seems no doubt, writes Sheed, that he was praying to his Father for the power this miracle of all miracles needed. For when it was on the point of happening, he said, "Father, I give thee thanks that thou hast heard me." We might wish now to take a look at the tomb where Lazarus had lain for 4 long days. But that surely is to miss the point. He has returned to life. And so let's listen to the voice of the protagonist himself, in the words of a contemporary poet, Peter Redgrove. Here now is an extract from Lazarus and the Sea.
I could say nothing of where I had been, but I knew the soil in my limbs and the rainwater in my mouth, knew the ground as a slow sea, unstable like clouds and tolerating no organization such as mine in its throat of my grave. The knotted roots would have entered my nostrils and held me by the armpits, woven a blanket for my cold body, dead in the smell of wet earth, and raised me to the sky for the sun in the slow dance of the seasons. Many gods like me would be laid in the ground, dissolve and be formed again in this pure night among the blessing of birds and the sifting water. But where was the boatman and his gliding punt, the judgment and the flames? These happenings were much spoken of in my childhood and the legends. And what judgment tore me to life, uprooted me back to my old problems and to the family, charged me with unfitness for this holy simplicity?
The thoughts and feelings of Lazarus on returning to life can only be imagined. But there's nothing fanciful in the stupendous dialogue between Jesus and Martha, which took place before the miracle and which is on record for all time. H.V. Morton exclaims admiringly,
"How marvellously St. John takes up the brush and fills in little details of this character study. Lord," began Martha in her usual blunt way, "if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died." Then, revealing the real depths of her soul, she says, "But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee." And it was to this depth of faith in Martha that Jesus spoke those words that have brought comfort and hope wherever a man or a woman has stood above an open grave. "I am the resurrection and the life," he said to Martha.